Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks, everyone. I am your host, John Lossworth. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Hey, guys. So I've been working on my Christopher Lambert impersonation, and I just want to know what you guys think. So here it is.
This is like when you did Bane doing Eddie Redmayne.
Let me guess. This is from Highlander?
Yeah, Highlander 2.
Oh, okay.
For me, it's, I think, my name is Connor McLeod. And I feel like I mixed a pirate and a hiss, and I lost the French and the Scottish in there. I don't know.
I feel like all his dialogue is ADR anyway. Like, I don't think any of it's natural.
So he's a French descent trying to pass off a Scottish accent.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why they cast him.
That though,
did he even try?
I don't think so.
Probably
but
not.
neither did Sean Connery, because remember, he's like, I'm Egyptian. Like, he thought I was talking to Bond.
and then when Costner was the American Robin Hood,
that never really crossed my mind. You've got like Alan Rickman and all these other people with their appropriate accents, and Kevin Costner is like he just got off a subway in Philly.
Yeah.
Michelle Rodriguez always sounds like she's from the Bronx.
Yeah. He just did not try at all in that movie, and I kind of love it.
No, bless his heart. All right, Levin, good. Give us a good Scottish-French accent.
No, I don't have it. I don't got it.
Well, it's better than what Lambert did. Yeah. You could argue.
Lambert, that was such a fish out of water thing for him. You know, it's kind of like the JCVD thing. Like, you know, Van Damme, even though they give him like a name, like what was it, Jack Quinn, in one of his movies we're making fun of, but he has his accent. But like, he always just plays a dude with his accent who's probably from like Quebec or actually from Belgium. Like, they don't make him an American in these movies. So like in Lambert and all his movies, he's always like that French guy.
Was he
for some reason there's a French guy?
Did he have any notable movies before Highlander? Because I'm trying to think of the movies he's been in. The only other one I can think of is Mortal Kombat.
He did Beowulf.
Yeah, that was horrible. But
yeah.
I liked Fortress, where he was in this futuristic prison. I thought that was pretty cool. And he had to escape. He was like wrongly imprisoned, like framed for murder.
All right. Yeah. I am looking here. He did a movie called Subway.
Oh, The Hunted.
Oh, he did Tarzan.
Oh, yeah, the Greystoke one, right?
Yeah.
But no, The Hunted, though, that was amazing. He was like, he witnessed an assassination by some ninjas, and then he like was being protected by good ninjas, and but it was really cool, and he was like kind of learning the ways a little bit. Like, that was a cool Lambert movie. We should do a Lambert podcast for all those people listening who are 22 years old. They're like, I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, this is Christopher Lambert eating.
All right, guys.
My name is Christopher Lambert, and I am like a Chinese lightning god, but I still talk the same way I do in all the other movies. Isn't Raiden supposed to be like a Chinese god?
Yeah.
Or a Japanese god, and he's this French dude.
Yeah.
Wait, in regards to Mortal Kombat, I don't think he was Chinese. He was just like, I think he was like an earth god or something. He was just like all encompassing.
Raiden was an Asian god.
Oh, was he?
In the game he was like presented as an Asian god.
No, I think you're wrong about that. Listen, I've seen the first movie.
I'll bet he was Asian.
In the video game or the movie?
In the video game, he was wearing that hat.
That doesn't make him Asian. Come on, Lemon Good.
If he was a white dude walking down the street with that hat, you'd call him an asshole.
No, it's hot down here in Florida.
Are you just looking this up like right now?
Yeah. I think it's, the game just said he was of Earth realm. So I don't think any specific nationality was mentioned. I don't know. I think we're just nitpicking here, though. Anyway, I think
you say Raiden, I say Raiden.
Yeah. Anyway, it's time to start the podcast like we usually do with listener questions. I think, Lemongood, you got the listener questions this week, right?
I most certainly did, and I actually spent all the last week at one of my national insect conferences, and so I was I had to get my listener questions from them because I didn't really have a lot of access to Twitter or anything. And so my first listener question, shockingly, has nothing to do with bugs, even though I was at an entomology conference. It is from Steve, and Steve asks, what was hands down the best Sylvester Stallone movie and why?
Rocky. It is an underdog classic that spawned five other films, was one best picture, was not, Sylvester Stallone was nominated for best writer, best actor. I mean, it exploded onto the scene and is one of the most cherished films he's ever made. So I think Rocky.
I'm surprised you didn't go Rocky IV.
That's what I did. But you see, it's kind of for the same reason. It's because you have the character that's so beloved, but he actually has, in my opinion, he faces a bigger challenge in Rocky IV.
Yeah, I love Rocky IV, but like film wise, it's not as good as Rocky. Like the best movie. Like the best movie. I think the best entertainment might be Rocky IV.
It won the Oscar for best picture, didn't it?
Yeah, it won Best Picture.
Yeah.
But there's just a 30 for 30, a fake one that College Humor did for Rocky IV. And they were talking about how Apollo Creed was in good dancing shape, not good fighting shape when he went up against Drago. Because he literally dances the entire Living in America song.
That's true. That might have tired him out, too. Like, he was all sweaty afterwards. Drago's just standing there.
And then they were joking around how about Drago hits so hard that he doesn't have to hit Rocky to hurt him. Because, like, a lot of the punches didn't land, but Rocky's head flies back. But I think, like, you know, he lost, but he was still screaming for Adrian. And, like, it's such a feel-good film, Rocky. And you know what? One of my – this is going to sound crazy, but I love Rocky Balboa.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The fifth one. Mm. Sixth one.
Yeah. No,
I like that one a lot too.
The fifth one went, the fifth one doesn't really exist.
Yeah, the fifth one doesn't exist. And he went back to like his Rocky roots in Rocky Balboa, I felt. And I really liked how human it was. Like I think it was kind of like Fast and the Furious. The first movie, a trucker almost killed them all. And then in the sixth, seventh film, they're indestructible. But in the first film, he lost. He was human. You know, he was talking to Adrian. He was like this just this dude. But then later ones, he could literally get punched 500 times in the face and not die.
You know what else? I think we can say this about pretty much all the Rocky movies is like of all these like big stars, whether they're making the movies or not, like writing the movies or not, like a lot of these big stars, you know, it's come up a lot of times, like how, you know, you just see the ego oozing out of the screen, and the Rocky movies there, you never get any of that. Like he's always got a tough life, even when he's winning.
Like, there's an earnestness to it, and he constantly wants to make himself look like a shithead.
You know, I love all the Rocky movies, excluding Rocky V. So that's the reason why I'm excited for Creed. It's basically just a continuation of the Rocky movies.
And Michael B. Jordan's awesome.
Michael B. Jordan's in it. The writer and, I think, director of Fruitvale Station is also... doing this movie, so it's got a good pedigree all around.
Oh, I'm gonna watch it.
Oh yeah. So
if Christopher Lambert's in it, I'm gonna be mad. So what do you think? Is it Lazbeth?
My choice was also Rocky, but I had a feeling that it was gonna get picked, so I had a backup, like a Stallone movie, and that is Demolition Man.
I was gonna say that. I was gonna have you hold, and I was gonna say that.
It's just
that
like
backup.
It's no, I mean, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. It's a completely corny, like '90s action movie starring Stallone, Wesley Snipes, Sandra Bullock, Rob Schneider. But it was just like, it was just like, all right. The concept of the movie is that, like, you know, Stallone gets frozen for like he wakes up in the future, like you know, the crime.
Like in the future. Yeah.
Yeah, the crime, like a time that he was from, like the 90s. You know, it's all been completely eradicated. Like the future is like completely soft now, and he's just like a fish out of water. But then like Wesley Snipes, who's from Stallone's time, comes in and just wrecks shit up, and like, you know, it's just, you know, coincidentally Stallone's around too, so it's just great. Like
dude,
but
yeah, that was like the criminal version of Wesley Snipes' like ability from White Men Can't Jump. Like Demolition Man has such amazing rewatchability. I mean, it's not quite the Fifth Element rewatchability for me, but it's close.
It's just, I think
you're
it was
on
like
TV.
I don't know.
He's swinging it by the cord.
Yeah.
I think back in the day, like, I wasn't like a huge Stallone fan. Like, I love Rocky, but I wasn't like as high on Stallone. But then when I watched Demolition Man, I think on HBO, I'm like, oh man, this movie's great. You know, it just kind of opened the door for me for Stallone a little bit. But yeah, the seashell scene was like completely.
It too.
Yeah, the seashell scene is what did it for me.
They never explain it.
Dude, no. Yeah, I had it on VHS, man. I've watched that movie probably 15 times, Demolition Man. But film-wise, I go Rocky. But I think fun-wise, I'm all down with Demolition Man.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Love me good. Well,
yeah, I'm kind of in that Rocky IV Demolition Man zone. But in that case, like, I'm choosing it kind of like I'm choosing a movie instead of a film. Like, I'm choosing it for raw entertainment value. But, like, yeah, if we're really choosing the thing that had the biggest, you know, emotional impact on me, it's going to be Rocky.
You know, and normally I try to answer these answers cheekily, you know, be, like, kind of cheeky with them. But I couldn't do it with this. I was like, Rocky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what, the first Rambo was pretty good.
Oh yeah, I mean it had depth to it too. Yeah.
The last Rambo movie he did was also pretty good.
Gosh. There's a scene in that movie where a sniper shoots a guy and a guy's head literally explodes.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I'm not just saying literally because the guy's head explodes because of one bullet. Like the guy's head gets blown clean off.
What about the scene where he sneaks up on the sentry and he literally rips his throat out?
Yeah.
Oh, like what? Oh man!
I just like in this movie we can use literally, crazily a lot. Does that make sense? Like he literally blew a guy's head off with a bullet. He literally ripped a guy's throat off.
When he got like that, I don't even know. I don't know guns, but that really big machine gun, like that stationary machine gun, the mounted one. It's like shooting what I'm guessing are these 120 caliber rounds, and so like the bullets as long as a forearm. And as he's shooting, he's cutting through like bodies, like they were cutting down the forest in Predator when they were just shooting at everything. Like people were getting like cut in half. It seemed
that was a gory movie. That was like very good. It's like very gory, right? That was, oh my gosh.
I remember when the trailer.
Like a zany martial arts gore movie too, because like someone got like shot, I think in like at the knee, and that soldier's like whole lower leg like spun, like it was knocked off, like flying in the air. That had so much blood.
Yeah,
that movie.
That and Apocalypto would make for a crazy doubleheader.
Oh man.
No, and so you think of effectiveness in blood, and we were talking about Halloween, you know, not pretty recently on the pod. And when you think back to Halloween, was there even like a drop of blood in that movie? There was like none.
Not really.
And it's like you don't need to have buckets of blood thrown in front of a camera for us to think that people are getting hurt. It's not necessary.
Yeah, that guy's dead because of the 40 gallon explosion.
Because his tibia and foot just spiraled 8 feet away from him.
I remember when a trailer for the movie first came out, there's a line Stallone says, like, where the journalist or the woman ask him to take her to Burma, and Stallone's like, Burma's a war zone. My friends and I just, like, were just making fun of that line for, like, a couple weeks. Like, Burma's a war zone. Hey, you want to go to lunch? Burma's a war zone. What are you doing tonight?
Everything he said, he said it with disdain for those people, too. He's like, you bring in guns? Like, no, we're journalists. You're not going to change anything.
Yeah. Why are people coming up this river?
Medical supplies and Bibles. And you're guns.
It's just going to be useless. You put on your head backwards.
Does it shoot Bibles?
With the three seashells.
So, well, you know, for what seems like such a simple, like, you know, questions 101 about movies, that actually came out to a pretty satisfying end. So thanks.
There we go. Yeah. Three seashells.
From my entomology meeting, and then Chris from my entomology meeting had our second question, and he said, more typical to the theme of being at a bug conference, he said, what was the best use of insects in a movie that wasn't about insects?
Okay. I think you guys might do this answer, but I got to say Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, because the ants, right? The scorpion, and like they were riding the ant and they put that little crumb in front of it. And like you bonded with that little ant, then it got wiped out by a scorpion. But like, I don't know. I love that ant. That ant was awesome. Like it was just adorable.
And I'm not trying to be like the smart ass guy, like, well, I'm an entomologist, I'm gonna tell you something that they got wrong there. But like this is a pretty egregious error. Like that ant, right? You know, you live in Florida, sometimes you see a big ant in some wood, and it might be whatever, a centimeter long, right? Big ant. So that scorpion was just slightly bigger than the ant.
Maybe it's a tiny scorpion.
That didn't look like a baby scorpion. It looked like it was supposed to just be a menacing scorpion that it came across, and like the scorpion was the size of an ant. And I'm thinking, this, holy crap! Like I didn't know that back then. And I gotta agree though, by the way, that ant, like they were feeding it, and it was like their buddy, and it it sacrificed itself to save them. Like when that jerky super tiny scorpion came along. Yeah. That was tough, too. Actually, when I think back, that's not something I feel like I'd want an 8-year-old to see. Like, didn't it sting it, like, in the thorax? And it,
yeah. Like you heard it, like, it was all dramatic.
Yeah, it made, like, a death whimper.
Yeah, the poor little guy.
That's a good call, Mark. I totally forgot about that, man. And then,
this is also bad, but remember My Girl? The bee, like, the terrible bees take out Macaulay.
Oh, but yes. Yeah, that's a good use of them. But you know what? You don't actually see insects in it.
Oh, okay. Well, you know they're there.
That's the concept of it. Like, I don't think you see a bug.
But it's still like, you have this sweet movie, then a child gets killed by bees.
Yeah, shit just got real. So, Lazabeth, what was your pick for this one?
I don't know if this really qualifies, because, like, the question kind of tripped me up. It's like, well, it's got bugs in it, but it's not really about bugs. So, but I'm going to go with Bug, with Michael Shannon and...
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, it's Bugs starring Ashley Judd, right?
Yep.
Ashley Judd, Michael Shannon. Basically, they both go kind of – or progressively get insane throughout the movie. They just kind of see bugs, like, everywhere. And, like, it gets to a point where, like, it's just, like, they go through literally insane lengths to get rid of these bugs. And it's just, like – I mean – I don't know. Like, I don't know if, like, the bugs are real or not, but, like, it was just, like, really, really icky. You know, it's one of the few movies I've watched where, like...
They blatantly have delusory parasitosis.
Yeah.
And a little mass hysteria going on there.
Yeah, it was just, like... icky. No, I mean, I've seen, like, a lot of bug movies, but, like, this is the one movie where it's, like, I felt like I had to take a shower after watching it. I'm just, like, ugh, no.
Friedkin can nail the make you feel dirty.
Yeah, I'm never watching this movie again, and I haven't.
in that movie, so that was interesting, because in that movie, it was smartly done. They every single thing that you hear, like, Michael Shannon say about insects, bugs, parasites, is just off the wall, horrendously wrong. Like, he was referring to aphids as like blood sucking parasites. Like, you know, aphids are like corn pests and things like – so, you know, it's like everything that he says, but it goes so well with like the convincing mass hysteria and the delusions. But yeah, everything in that movie was just like – there's nothing remotely scientifically accurate in any of the stuff that he's saying, and he's just like convincing – was it Ashley Judd?
Yeah.
He's convincing her, and she just goes nuts with them. I think they burned down the house at the end after they, like, put tinfoil all over all the surfaces. Is that what happened?
I mean, it's been a couple of years, but I think they burned themselves along with the house, I think. I can't remember.
It was just – I got to see – I haven't seen that in ages. I
vaguely remember Harry Connick Jr. being in that movie too.
The Connick?
Yeah. Wasn't he in that?
I think, yeah, maybe he like was like the like a friend or an ex love interest who like stopped by to check on them earlier in the movie, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. It's been a couple of years since I've seen the movie, and it'll probably be a couple more years till I see it again. So yeah.
I feel like I picked like the really obvious one. I chose Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and that had two fantastic bug scenes. There was like the dinner where there are these giant scarab beetles on a tray, these huge beetles, and they clearly were cooked, right? Because someone just picks off the hardened wing, and he's like licking the inside of the carapace of the beetle, like it's all slimy and stuff. And there was all sorts of other stuff at this weird dinner too. But like, and then later when they were in the room with the trap where the walls are coming down on them and there's spikes coming out of the ceiling as it's coming down, and Kate Capshaw, the woman, I think her name was Willie or something weird in that
movie.
Yeah,
Willie.
He's like yelling at her from across the wall to reach in to like turn this lever. And as she's reaching in, like there are all these giant millipedes and giant roaches crawling all over her. When she holds up the lantern, she's got like a 1 foot long stick bug crawling on her. Like, it's just so over the top ridiculous. Like, she blinked and didn't notice that she was wearing 5 pounds of bugs. Like, it's just so over the top, but you know, fun adventure movie. And that's what I first think of.
Raiders of the Lost Ark also had a pretty cool insect scene. I think it was in the very beginning with the spiders or I think they were tarantulas or something. Like all over their backs. Like Harrison Ford's like, hey,
oh yeah.
And he's like, hey, come here, and just like brushes them off of his whip.
I would also give In the Army Now a good one.
Right. We talked about that in the podcast too with David Alan Grier.
There's not a scorpion on your back.
Yeah.
That was such a great I can't really watch that movie anymore in a way, but there are certain scenes that I will always just love, like on YouTube. I have to just do it YouTube clips.
I think one of the funniest, I think it's funny. Like, you guys might not think it's funny, but I think it was in Dr. No. I think there was the scene where, you know, Sean Connery's sleeping in his bed, but then like he wakes up and you see a tarantula like kind of like in his bed. But then like if you look closely, you can see like there's like a pane of glass, like between him and the spider. It was just like, I was like, oh, okay. Like, but I mean,
as if they were dangerous anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think the same thing happens in, Raiders of the Lost Ark, when you see Harrison Ford like drop into the pit, and then he comes face to face with the one of the snakes. If you look closely, you can see like the reflection of like the snakes. I mean,
good catch, but a snake is actually dangerous.
Yeah.
Tarantula is, I don't know what.
No,
is,
I mean,
I
don't. Spiders.
I could be wrong. It could have been like something other than a tarantula. I don't know. It looked like a tarantula to me. I don't know.
Connery hated spiders.
Yeah.
So he was like this manly man, but he was definitely afraid of spiders.
Hey, look, quick question.
I don't want to be laying down with the with a tarantula wandering around like it could come touch me. Like, I do bugs for a living, and I don't want to deal with that. However, if I'm getting paid millions of dollars to make a movie, at that point I'd be over it.
Yeah,
he's got a phobia. I'm not going to tease him for having a phobia of spiders.
Hey, quick digression. Like Sean Connery, does he have a forearm tattoo? Because I remember watching like his Bond movies, and like it looked like he had a tattoo, but it looked like it was covered up with makeup. I don't know if that was like.
He did. They just got progressively worse at covering it up.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just something that was stuck in my head. I'm just like, huh.
Yeah, we were sitting there, and we were like, wait, does he have a tattoo on his forearm? And like, yeah, the makeup was really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, what is it? Yeah, I forget what it is, but he definitely has a forearm tattoo.
Yeah. Apparently, he also wore a toupee when he was making the Bond
movies. He did.
Oh, man. We're just totally breaking down the illusion of James Bond right here. It's kind of sad. Oh, no. Sean Connery is still a manly man, though. Toupee.
That's right. He'll take care of it.
Spider phobia and all.
Toupee or not toupee?
Yeah. So I think that answers that question. Toupees and spider phobias.
Toupee or not toupee?
Yeah. His tattoos say Scotland forever and mum and dad. And he wore a toupee in all of them because he started losing his hair at 21.
At 21?
Yeah.
That's rough.
Patrick Stewart started losing his hair like when he was in the teens.
Really? I think Patrick Stewart was like Stewie. He just never got hair.
Yeah.
It's like Family Guy Stewie. He just, it's always that level.
A buddy of mine was like, yo, I think Patrick Stewart was born bald. I'm like, well, I mean, we're all born bald. So, okay.
That's like his big theory that he says in front of like 50 people.
I was like, well, no, there's a good chance he was born bald.
Yeah, I mean, there's a potential it happened.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, thanks again to our entomologists for our listener questions this week. And yeah, I think I'm going to hand out to Mark for the topic this week.
That's right. And so today's topic is something that I've always sort of thought like to think about. And these are like 60 seconds or less characters. These aren't like cameos. We were talking about Sean William Scott in Old School. Hopefully you guys didn't pick him. But, you know, that's like a cameo. He's in there for several minutes. I'm talking about characters that are on screen for 60 seconds or less. And obviously there are some characters that probably push it up to 90 or 120. So, I mean, you know, we didn't exactly count the seconds. But the characters that I picked and I asked you guys to pick are just what, like, what had the most bang for their buck? We're talking characters that were on the screen. You blink, then they're gone. Like, what are some characters that have lingered in your memory that have had next to nothing screen time? And I guess I'll start off with the granddaddy of all 60 seconds or less characters, and that's Star Wars. And I'm going to head over to Star Wars Return of the Jedi, and I am going to pick Malakili, the man from Corellia who trained the Rancor for Jabba.
If you okay. I was wondering where you were going with that.
And if you don't know, he originally worked for Gargon the Hunt's Traveling Hunt Circus Horrificus. But some animals escaped and they killed some people. So he got shipped off to work with Jabba, where he trained the Rancor. And actually, Rancor lost a fight one time and Salacious Crumb tortured him brutally. Later, he would eat and dine with the Rancor. He would sit on the Rancor's foot. Supposedly he helped the Tusken Raiders, and when all was said and done at the end, he went and opened up a restaurant. According
to, it's just like from like continued Star Wars fiction.
Yeah, like you know, when I was younger, I read a book, Tales of the Mos Eisley Cantina, Tales of the Bounty Hunters, and Tales of Jabba's Palace, and I remember him because he would sit on Rancor's foot and eat food with the Rancor. But the reason I love this so much is there's a scene where Rancor's dead. He opens up the door. He's crying. He's bawling his eyes out. Then his buddy comes up to him, starts going, "It's okay. It's okay." Then he starts like bawling in his buddy's arms. And it's like a tender moment inside like a really terrible place. You know, like, his, like this guy's bawling his eyes out about his dead carnivorous creature. And his buddy's just like, "It's okay, man. It's okay." Like they were just buddies. Like,
when we watch it, we feel like we're watching this evil monster trained by these evil people. But at the end of the day, like, this is just some dude who's an animal trainer with a job, and he probably cares about these animals a lot. And the Rancor is just a big hungry thing. It's not like it you know, wants to do mean shit.
It's an animal. It was probably just hanging out. They saw some people drop in there. He goes, "All right, might as well."
You know? Like, yes, it's like killing a stray animal because you don't know what to do with it. And then like the owner comes along and they're sad. Like, it's like when you remove yourself from rooting for the good guys of that movie, like maybe that trainer was a good guy.
Yeah. And I just love that. I don't know. This guy was not on screen. He was on screen for under 60 seconds. But like that scene of his buddy consoling him and him crying has always stuck with me for some reason.
Was his buddy one of those like green underbite monsters? Goblin?
The Gamorrean guard got eaten, and then this was like another type of monster. Okay. But it's love. He's like, "It's okay." You know, like it's just like they were buddies. And then he opened a restaurant, according to Wikipedia. However,
Wikipedia, I didn't even catch that until just now.
I am wondering if he. There's one more thing. In The Hobbit: Battle of the Five Armies, there's an ogre that has a battering ram on his head. And he like knocks down this castle wall, and then he falls back unconscious. He goes, "Ugh!"
Yeah, like the moment he hits it, he's just like limp on the ground.
Yeah, I think he probably broke his neck or something. But I would have liked to see what Malakili could have done with him. But and then him crying after that happens. But yeah, so that's my first one. Just a classic 60 second or less character that actually has an entire chapter written about him.
Nice.
So yeah, Laz, what do you got?
So I'm a little confused. Like actual characters or like. Were cameos just like not like
we're kind of doesn't matter
okay Because I just mainly went with, like, kind of celebrity cameos.
That's fine.
Pretty much. Yeah, so the first one I got, I don't have these in any particular order, but the first one I got is Bill Murray in Get Smart. I wanted Bill Murray in Zombieland, but that was way more than 60 seconds.
Yeah,
I think,
yeah.
I think it was like 10 minutes. So I'm just like, yeah, that's too much. But no, Bill Murray was in Get Smart. He was one of
a character.
Yeah, I mean, he was like one of Max's contacts, but like he was like hiding in a tree.
It was just like a magazine or something.
Yeah, it was just like, it was so hilarious. Like Bill Murray, like, you could tell, like, his character's been hiding in that tree for, like, a long time. Like, no one, like, comes to see him. And, like, Steve Carell was, like, the first person who's seen him in a while. And Bill Murray's like, where are you going? You're not coming back. You're not coming back. I think it was just, like, the look on Bill Murray's face and, like, just seeing him in that tree. Like, it was just, like, it was just so hilarious. I'm just like, this is just pure Bill Murray right now.
And like, just I didn't see it coming either. Like, no. I had no idea he was going to be in that tree. And no. So, like, I was laughing so hard, not because I just love Bill Murray, but, yeah, he's not coming back.
You know what's great is that, like, I know, but, like, I didn't know he was going to be in Zombieland either, and that was a great surprise.
Yeah.
I feel like Bill Murray's at his best when you don't know he's going to be in the movie. I'm like, oh, shit, that's Bill Murray.
Oh, wait, well, Coffee and Cigarettes, I didn't know he was in that, and there's a scene where he's with RZA, and he's in a diner, and he's drinking from a mug, like a big mug of coffee.
Yeah,
and then he's just smoking cigarettes, looking all paranoid. Like, you're Bill Murray. He's like, yeah. He's like, why are you working here at this diner? He's like, I'm just hiding out. And like, I was like, what? Like, Riz is talking to Bill Murray.
I think for the rest of his career, Bill Murray should like not, or like should include in his contract, please don't advertise my appearance in this movie.
Yeah,
like it should always be a surprise. Like he should never be billed. Like, just let the audience find out. I'm like
Rock the Casbah should have been about, like, Zooey Deschanel and Kate Hudson.
Yeah.
And then, like, you're like, wait a second, Bill Murray's in the star of this movie?
Whoa. That would be such a Bill Murray thing to do. Please do it, Bill Murray.
That's right.
So my first is, I picked a lot of funny ones. Usually it's the funny ones that stick with me, but this first one is, it's actually from a fight, and it's from Troy. And it's Nathan Jones as Boagrius.
Yeah.
And so, like,
he's all bluster.
Like, yeah, it's like the beginning of the movie. You know, the two armies are meeting. Agamemnon is agreeing to, like, have his champion, who we know is Achilles, fight. You know, there's opponent's champion who turns out to be Boagrius. And Nathan Jones comes out. He's 6'11". He's almost 400 pounds. You know, and he's like, rawr! Rawr! Like, someone just uncaged a beast, right? And everyone's riled. And then he's like, what was it? Then Agamemnon's like, Achilles! And it's just crickets because he's still sleeping in some village nearby. He's, Boagrius has this effect on many heroes. Agamemnon's giving him like a nasty look after he says, he's like, send someone to get Achilles. And they get Achilles, and Achilles comes in, and, you know, he just saunters right on up, right? He sees this monster of a man. And as he's running up, like, there's some great spear throws, and it ruins his shield. But when he runs up, he does that running jump and stabs the guy right down the trapezius. Like, right down in the middle of his collarbone. And it was just, like, one strike. And when that happened, I saw that with my cousin Ryan in theaters. We just looked at each other with our mouths open in total silence. Like, we just saw the single coolest motion of one sword ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
And then he just fell on the ground and died.
And then he took, like, these two little steps and crumbled. But that was – I love Nathan Jones. Back then, I had no idea who he was, and now we see him in Fury Road, and he was in Jet Li's
The Protector
Legend.
2 he was in.
Protector 2, yeah. He was in The Condemned for a little bit role, and he was in Muay Thai Giant. He's got all this weird stuff, but he's a lot of fun to see on screen.
You know what? I want to see a director take a chance on him, like maybe like a Richard Linklater. Like cast him in like a romantic, like a romantic
Giant
drama.
Hood.
Yeah.
Film 20 years of his life. Giant. I like it.
Just want like a slow
like a
plotting drama.
Wrestler.
Yeah.
I want to see a movie. Yeah. He can act. He was good in Mad Max.
I want to see Nathan Jones kind of stretch his chops.
You know what kind of hurt me, though? I found out that he fought in Pride 1, which is like the, you know, MMA in Japan.
Yeah.
And he lost.
Really?
Well, I mean, did he face another monstrous human, or was it?
I don't know, but he didn't put up too great of a battle, which kind of bums me out for a 6'11" guy. It just shows how good MMA is. But
I mean,
yeah, dude's a monster. All right, so the next one I have is Uli from Die Hard, and he is the henchman who ate the candy bars while he was waiting for the. The cops to break the door. Remember when like all of Hans Gruber's henchmen were lined up and they were waiting to shoot all the cops that were coming in? And like you have this really tense moment, and then this one henchman grabs out a Crunch bar, and then he grabs out a Mars bar, and like he actually improvised that line because he felt the scene needed some humor. And he didn't want to get yelled at for taking food. So like yeah, exactly. I love it. And like, you know, he had a couple lines. He said, move it, come on. And then he goes, got it. But like, I don't know. He was just the perfect henchman who had like really nothing to do. He was on screen for about 60 seconds. But I just love this scene that there's this massive gunfight about to happen. And he's just like, ooh, Crunch bar. And it just kind of gives him this aura of like he's been there, done that. And you like you kind of feel bad for the cops because like, oh, they're man. Done. You know what I mean? Like. This guy is so relaxed. There's about to be bullets spraying everywhere, and he's eating a Crunch bar. Like, that's – I don't know. I love that. I think that's, like, just pure gold. And the henchmen in Die Hard were really good and memorable. I think that's why it's so such a great film is you have Hans Gruber and you have his crew.
Well, the henchmen weren't, like, you know, bumbling idiots. Like, they were – they could have, like, commanded their own crew.
Oh, yeah. I like that. They could have done a sub crew.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. Hey.
It's funny you mentioned Die Hard because one of the picks that I didn't decide to use today for my picks was in Die Hard with a Vengeance when there's this guy, Jerry, driving the truck and he's giving Bruce Willis a ride and he's giving him this elaborately trivial history of like the aqueducts under the city. And Bruce is just like, you can see him like, why won't this guy shut up? And then later he's like, okay, Jerry, thanks for the ride. You got to get in touch with my police chief. This is his name. Tell him he's got to find out who the 21st president was because it was part of all those little riddles and stuff. He's just like Chester A. Arthur. He's like, what? He's just Chester A. Arthur. And then he rattled off like facts like 1881 to 1885 or something. And he's like nominated vice president in 1880. Did you know that he was the collector of customs right here in New York? And Bruce Willis looks back at him with this like incredulous smile like, no, I didn't know that, Jerry. Take care of yourself.
So he's the opposite of Charles Grodin from So I Married an Axe Murderer, where the cop takes his car. And he's like, I need your car. And Grodin's like, no.
No.
And yeah, then he jumps in with him. He's like, can you drive faster? No. Yeah, so that was my guy, just Uli from Die Hard. I just love that he ate candy bars before a gunfight. So what do you got, Laz?
I'm going to go with 21 Jump Street. And Johnny Depp, actually. Now, for those of you who don't know, Johnny Depp starred in the original TV series 21 Jump Street that the movie was based on. So seeing him do like a quick cameo in the movie was a pleasant surprise. I had no idea, just like Bill Murray in Get Smart and Zombieland, that Johnny Depp was going to be in 21 Jump Street. They hit that pretty well, actually, because I don't think I heard anything about that.
They like, literally hit it.
Yeah. But no, it was great. It was hilarious. Like you find out that like he was like one of the bad guys like in undercover the whole time, and it was just like it was just hilariously well done. Like because Johnny Depp ends up getting like killed, killed in the movie. Like oh no, what was his name? Like it was like
what was his character from the 21 Jump Street?
Yeah,
Johnny Rico.
Something. Yeah. Sounds about
Johnny
right.
Rico was Casper Van Dien in Starship Troopers.
Oh yeah,
okay. Interesting. Oh, I just read about that movie, so maybe that's why.
But no, there's a line there where it's like, so what? I got my balls tattooed for nothing? Like, oh yeah, that was a prank. So I meant to tell you, but you already did it.
Oh, he was Officer Tom Hansen.
Oh right. No, I love Jonah Hill's reaction when he finds out that Johnny Depp was undercover. It's like, wow, man, I had no idea. You're like a really good actor.
Yeah, and then he just gets wiped out.
I don't know. Both 21 Jump Street movies were pretty hilarious, actually. I'm actually excited for the third movie, if they ever do it.
Sun's out, guns out.
Yeah.
So my second pick is, I got to tell you, the way that you call this character, I got from a friend of mine. I was sitting around a campfire a week ago, and a good friend of mine, Jesse from New Jersey, he actually gave me all the picks that I'm using today, and I didn't even want to come up with any of my own because I liked him so much. But what really stuck with me was the one line that he'd give so that you know who the character is, and he said, "The librarian who thinks his stamp is really loud in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade." And there's a scene where they're in this old library and they know that they have to get to like these catacombs in the city. And Indiana Jones picks up this big like metal thing that, you know, usually is used to hold up the rope that keeps you away from like an exhibit. And he picks it up and he slams it against the granite tile. And right as he does that, we cut to this random librarian who looks a little like a well-kept Albert Einstein. He had just stamped a book like after its return. And with that loud noise echoing in the hall, he then just looks at the stamp like, huh? And then we cut back to Indiana Jones, and he slams the thing again. And right after he does it, we see the guy stamping it again right on cue. It's so, like, inordinately silly, the timing. And then there's a third time. And after the third time, the dude picks up the stamp and, like, looks at the stamping ink side with this face of total disbelief. And then he just lightly sets it down on a stack of books. That was one of those scenes, though, like, it had no business being there, right? Because Indiana Jones is in there. They're just breaking this open so they can go in the catacombs to the next part of the adventure. And like, someone thought to put this in. And it was so, like, it was so endearing and hilarious and perfectly staged. And I remember every time I'd see that, just laughing with my family, because we'd usually watch that movie together.
I love that guy.
But his face, like, I actually pulled up the YouTube video just to watch it again. And even though when my friend just said, "The guy who thinks his stamp is really loud," from Indiana Jones, it's like I immediately laughed, like reliving it in my head. But just seeing his face was so priceless. I love that character. He's on the screen for three times, each time for not even 5 seconds. And that's the impact.
Perfect. No, yeah, nice. That's a 15. Yeah, this is definitely a 60-second or less character. And so
hold on. I think now is a good time to go on break, actually.
I like it. Let's do it.
Don't worry. We'll promise the break will be 60 seconds.
Or less.
Yeah.
Or more.
Probably.
Lambert.
When I say pod, you say...
pie.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Whoa. What's going on, Kyle?
Take your headphones off real quick.
Okay, sorry.
John, what the hell is this?
I don't know. Robert invited me over.
I don't know. This is kind of awkward. Are we doing like a promo or something?
I don't know. I wish he'd put on his pants, though.
Yeah, he's like dancing around. He's talking about Sharp Dropper.
I think he's looking for the baby oil.
Anyways, Robert, what are we doing? Huh? What are we doing?
What was that? I can put my headphones back on?
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing a promo for Shark Dropper.
Oh, okay.
That podcast we do that has improv, and we just talk about our daily lives and stuff.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I still wish you'd find your pants.
Where can I find it?
Oh, wait. Are we supposed to wear sharkdropper.com?
Short shot time.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I think that was 60 seconds or less. I don't know. I didn't really time it. I'm assuming it's 60 seconds or less. I don't know. All right, Love and Good, I think you have our third listener question today.
Yes, our third listener question comes from Sewell from, again, the Entomological Society of America.
Sewell?
And it was an Asian person.
Sewell?
I don't know how to spell the name. It was Sewell, like S-U-L-L.
I thought you said
maybe?
Zool. Like from Ghostbusters.
No, not Zool. And the question is, are you a god?
You always say yes.
So Sewell's question is, what was the most scientifically accurate bug or animal themed movie?
Mimic.
The most scientifically accurate.
Because cockroaches are terrible, and I fully believe that they could become those creatures.
Okay, fair.
So
they can survive a nuclear holocaust. They can, you know, they can harass Josh Brolin and Elizabeth Shue. Oh, Mira Sorvino. I was thinking Hollow Man. I mean, I don't want cockroaches that big attacking me. I don't want, you know, Charles S. Dutton. If they took down Charles S. Dutton, I believe it. If something could kill Charles S. Dutton, like aliens and cockroaches could kill Charles S. Dutton. That's it.
Yeah.
He put up a good fight in Alien 3, though.
Yeah. Great fight. And, I mean, the mimics got him, too. But I just think these stupid cockroaches that mimic people, that wear hats and harass blind kids, I think they're 100% accurate.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I can't prove that.
I can't prove you wrong.
I cannot prove that there is not a roach that big somewhere.
That's right.
Yeah. But if I was a betting man.
Yeah, prove me wrong, guys. Prove me wrong.
I won't.
I just got to go with them. I got to go with those guys.
What do you think, Lazavath? What's the most scientifically accurate bug or animal-themed movie?
So I read that question earlier, and in my head I'm thinking, well, this is purely a John Lovegood question because he has a PhD in entomology. So I'm going to leave it to him to pick the right answer. But in the meantime, I'm going to go with the answer that's probably like the least accurate. I'm going to go like as far away from Lovegood as possible. So I'm going to go with like A Bug's Life or ants. That's my answer.
I'm sure they're chatty. I'm sure there's Sylvester Stallone and Woody Allen and Dave Foley voiced creature out there.
Yeah, why not? Aren't they pretty much the same movie though? Ants and A Bug's Life.
I think so.
They came out like in the same year, I think, right?
Yeah.
It's like one of those like movies, like double movies that come out like within like the same year. They're basically like the same thing.
Yeah, but I remember thinking that like A Bug's Life seemed much better thought out and like a nice movie, and I thought that Ants was just dumb.
A Bug's Life was the Pixar one, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. I didn't like it.
I don't know.
Ants was DreamWorks.
So love and good. How scientifically accurate are those movies?
Dumb.
No.
Not. Okay. I don't know. So I didn't actually answer it the way that Lazavath thought that I would answer it. I was just like thinking up like kind of random movies in my head where the animal was the antagonist, kind of. And for me, it was Lake Placid.
The game.
Like in Lake Placid, you have this irregularly giant crocodile, right, in an inordinate location, but they come up in the movie with like somewhat reasonable hypotheses trying to justify how it got there. It is really, really big, but they even talk about how it's so big. How could we not notice it? And they come up with good rationales. And the way that it behaves, nothing that it does is like I'm thinking of the word superhuman, but it's like super giant crocodilian. I don't know. It just seems to behave the way that you might imagine that a giant crocodile would behave.
And he's pretty laid back. Like, not many people knew about him for a long time. Like, Betty White was feeding that thing forever.
She'd be a good 60-second character, but she's in the movie a lot, I guess.
And then the only time that people, like, he kills people are pretty much when they go in the water to poke him with sticks.
And the reason that this came up in my head, actually, is because back when I was doing my master's degree, my boss, who's famous to entomologists, but no one else listening would ever know him. But he actually turned to me when I was talking about Lake Placid one day, like 10 years ago. And he said how he thought it was the most like naturally accurate movie that was basically like an animal monster movie.
Hmm. What about Edgar from Men in Black, the alien, the cockroach alien?
The Edgar suit?
Yep.
The Edgar suit wearing giant bug. We got a bug.
hey, Edgar. I like his wife. Hey, Edgar.
Hey, Edgar.
What's going on, Edgar? You're a cockroach bug, too. I'm on a cockroach kick.
She was giving, like, the account to the Men in Black. It wasn't like Edgar. It was like someone was wearing an Edgar suit.
Those dang Eggers.
That's a good 60-second character right there.
Oh, yeah. That looks hilarious. I wonder if she could defeat the mimic. I doubt it.
Yeah.
But, you know, Guillermo del Toro literally, like, I keep saying literally, but he literally writes 80-page for Pacific Rim, I think he wrote 80 pages just about one robot. So for these mimics, I know it was rushed, but I bet he probably had, I'm guessing, at least 243 pages about how these things were created. And if and a scientist broke those down, the scientist would go, yep.
Sure. Sure.
I can't prove it wrong.
Seems legit.
Seems legit.
Just pay me my consulting fee and I'll be out here.
Yeah, this is great. This is great, Del Toro.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Just run with it.
Just run with it. Edgar. So answer is Edgar.
Yeah, Edgar. Edgar.
Edgar suit. Edgar suit. Love it. All right, so I guess we'll get back to our 60 seconds or less characters. And the one I want to pick is – this is going to sound very random, and I don't think you guys have watched this movie. I don't think a lot of people have watched this movie, but I'm doing it to promote an actor I love. And there's a scene in the Kenneth Branagh Cinderella that came out this year where Rob Brydon, who is in The Trip and The Trip to Italy, which are these amazing films he did with Steve Coogan, but he plays this painter called Master Phineas. And there's it's like this totally traditional fairy tale, but halfway through, he's in it for about a minute. And he's described as like I read a review and they call him a shambolic court painter where he paints the king's portraits. But he's just like all over the place. He's trying to throw in his advice. They drop him on the ground. He's talking about how great the prince's nostrils are. It's like this really weird little scene with this actor I love stealing the show for a minute and then disappearing. And that got me thinking about like Jack Black from Anchorman, Will Ferrell from The Last Man on Earth, Jonah Hill from 40-Year-Old Virgin, where these really weird characters that you love pop up for no reason other than just to be funny. And so I just love this 60-second character because he's like a really pompous little guy. He's really talented, but he's like talking smack to the king. He's, I don't know. I just like him. I love Rob Brydon. I love The Trip and The Trip to Italy. So I included him into my list. Yeah. So Cinderella.
Nice. Well, now I'm curious to see. Now you got me curious to see something that I've never even heard of, and by very nature I would normally avoid.
Like, it's a good movie. The Lily, the actress who plays Cinderella is nice. Cate Blanchett's in it. You know, it doesn't get better than her. Like, you know, Oscar winner running around acting sassy. But, I mean, I don't know. I love Rob Brydon. Like, if you watch The Trip and The Trip to Italy, but I just like his painting scene. Like, they drop him too far, and, like, instead of, like, him admitting his fault that he landed on the ground, he's like, oh, your nostrils look great from right here. Like, he's like this pompous idiot, but he's, like, really good at what he does. I love that about him. He's just this total schmuck, but he's actually very talented. So they pretty much, I think, they kind of have to put up with him. They're like, I got to go to Master Phineas. He's a real pain in the ass, but you should see my portraits when I'm done with him. So that's the way I'm doing. Like, I don't know. I like him. I love Rob Brydon, so I had to put him in for Cinderella. So
all right, well, that, again, if you didn't give that plug, I would never be willing to watch a live action Cinderella movie. Now I really will give it a shot if I come across it on Netflix this weekend or something.
It's an adorable film, and okay. it made like $400 million worldwide, $500 million. Yeah,
wow,
like it was a blockbuster, but all because of Rob Brydon.
Oh yeah, obviously.
But guys, listen. Netflix, The Trip and The Trip to Italy. The Trip to Italy. Watch them. They are amazing and hilarious.
All right, well, my third pick is – and again, I got to give credit. I just want to say it one more time. This is my good friend Jesse from New Jersey. He gave me all of my picks. He's a hell of a movie buff. But my next pick is The Priest That Gets Bullied in Fight Club for a Homework Assignment.
Oh yeah!
You guys remember this? All the guys in the Fight Club, and Edward Norton is narrating hell about it after the scene where Brad Pitt loses a fight, and he keeps taunting the guy to keep hitting him, and then he gives everyone a homework assignment to go start a fight and lose, and so like. Then Edward Norton is narrating about the human nature as we see little – like we keep jumping between clips of people trying to pick their fights, you know, initiating the fights. And then the fights go on. And then we see the end of these little fights. And he's saying, you know, it's actually amazing how very hard people will – like or something like the extremes people will go to avoid a fight. And so – this priest is walking by, and this guy is just I don't know, hosing down the concrete for some reason of a driveway. And he just jerks his hand over and sprays a little water on this priest as he's walking by. And the priest stops. He's like, excuse me, sir, I think that you just sprayed me with, and he sprays him again, like, right, and he's just like, what, excuse, what are you doing? And then he comes over and he slaps the Bible out of his hand, like a bully would your books when you're walking down the hall. Like, you wound up, it was so silly. And of course, I'm also sitting back thinking, like, did the priest just walk around town holding a Bible? Is that just, but whatever. Like, and then eventually he gets the priest to fight him, but the priest, like, he does not want to be dealing with this at the time. He's this meek little guy, and he winds up with the worst punch ever. Like, when he does, it's almost like he made a fist, but then motioned his hand as if he was trying to overhand slap you. Like, it just didn't make – it was pretty funny.
And the guy he hit was Colt McHaney, I think his name, who's a big dude.
Yeah.
Like, I love that. Yeah, I love Fight Club.
Well, I think in that montage where, like, they were trying to provoke fights, wasn't the priest, like, one of the first guys to actually hit back?
Yeah. With his inverted punch.
Like, it was just really cute. Like, and there was everything about it. Like, that priest character, he almost struck you as the kid who got bullied again. Excuse me, I think that you just sprayed me with your hose. Of course you did.
But I kind of like him, though, that he actually threw a punch. Like, he was just like, you know what? I'm going to go down, but no one's going to slap my Bible down and spray me. Like, this guy, he went for it. Yeah. Like, he probably thought he was going to lose, and he still threw a punch. Like, you know, who says everyone's wimps? Like,
what was funny is that after he hits him, like, the Fight Club guy doesn't really respond much, and, like, the priest kind of freezes and then runs away, and then the guy chases him and, like, kind of grabs him, and then, like, it wasn't until the real fight or flight that the priest really started unloading some punches. So it's like, yeah, everything – it was almost like the sweetest scene in Fight Club, just this little priest getting his day to feel tough almost. I don't know.
I like it, though. I like that he, like – I don't know. I like that he stood up for himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like – it's – yeah. Yeah. You know, it actually makes me think of another one that I didn't use, but it was from Bad Boys 2 when the teenage boy shows up to take out Martin Lawrence's daughter on a date.
No.
But I won't get into it. But that scene, that boy has like three lines that he mumbles, and most of it is just him acting, looking uncomfortable as, you know, Will Smith and Martin Lawrence are digging into him for like maybe 3 minutes. But I wanted to pick that, but it was harder to communicate to people who maybe haven't seen the movie, in my opinion.
Man, I'm glad I hate that movie.
Oh, I love Bad Boys 2.
Oh, gosh. I can't do it. I can't do it.
You know, like, I mean, because you got the same Cuban drug lord from Blow with Johnny Depp, right? He's the cocaine drug lord in this, and he's like, these rats are eating my money. This is a stupid problem to have, but it is a problem nonetheless. Then they call the exterminators.
Oh, I just can't do that movie.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Can't do it. What do you got, Laz?
All right, so this will be the first kind of non-celebrity kind of character on my list, but I'm going with Argyle. What's his name? From Die Hard. He's the limo driver.
Yeah.
Oh, I think three Die Hard references coming up in this.
I think, okay, so basically he drives John McClane. He picks up John McClane from the airport, drives him to Nakatomi Tower, and then he just chills like in the parking garage in the basement for, like, the whole movie. Like, you got, like, the hostage takeover, you got the shooting, you got, you know, John McClane, like, running for his life, and, you know, Argyle's sitting in his limo, like, listening to music, talking his oversized car phone.
Yeah. It's just great. In the back seat, like someone was driving him with music on, sunglasses, and champagne.
The great part is that, like, I mean, obviously, besides the fact that he's completely oblivious to what's going on, is that he's the one who takes John and Holly away from the tower at the end of the movie. And it's like, yeah. It's just appropriate. I'm like, oh, nice.
And he smashes the car.
Yeah.
Like, you drive, like, yeah. I mean, that's, I loved what you said about the henchmen in Die Hard, is that they could all lead their own crew. But then you got me thinking about, like, Predator and Aliens. All those people could have probably led their own crew.
Oh, yeah.
Except for Hudson.
Oh, except for Hudson.
Yeah. Hudson, I would hate to be led by Hudson.
Yeah. I'm glad that Argyle didn't get killed.
Yeah. In Die Hard. No, and he had that big bear, didn't he, in his
Yeah.
In his limo.
Yeah.
He was when he was in the back seat, like living it up. I think the bear was like sitting next to him, like it was his girlfriend or something.
He's just hanging out down there. I love Argyle.
Well, okay, I take that back. He wasn't completely oblivious. I think towards the end of the movie, he just kind of realized what was going on. But yeah. I mean, still, yeah, he was still chilling in the limo. So
the majority of it, it was.
Yeah, it was great.
I love me some Die Hard. All right, so I guess it's back to me, and this is probably the hardest I've laughed, aside from Royal Tenenbaum. The tennis scene in Royal Tenenbaums where Gandhi is playing Richie Tenenbaum is probably the hardest I've laughed in the cinema. And that's a great 60-second character as Gandhi. But the one I have here is the grandma, Mrs. Reaper, in Hot Fuzz, who gets kicked in the face by Nicholas Angel. So there's a scene where he leaves town and he comes back, and there's this guy parked on the road. You know, they're making sure no one comes into the town. So he has like this battle with this old guy, really old guy, Nicholas Angel, Simon Pegg. And this woman shoots at him. He turns, looks over, and there's this really old woman with a shotgun. She pops open the shotgun. She's reloading it. Nicholas Angel runs at her, kicks her right in the face, knocks her unconscious. The next scene is her tied up with a massive bloody nose. This like 90-year-old woman with a bloody nose, and she's looking defiant as ever. That's why I loved her. Like, she got drop kicked in the face. She's tied up, and she's still like, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. Like, she's a tough old broad, man. And she, because of that character and her first missed shot, this 60-second character is, like, responsible for one of the biggest laughs I've had in years when she gets drop-kicked in the face.
And that's in the trailer for the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I remember seeing that in the trailer, and that's, like, the moment that I just knew I had to go see that. Was that a dropkick, like a WWF two-footed dropkick thing?
Double drop. Both his feet hit her face.
Like, that's just – and who drop kicks someone in the face? Like, that's just so ridiculous.
And the fact that she could – like, this 90-year-old woman could handle that huge gun. Like, she's a tough lady. So, that's my that's my fourth. I just love – I love that character, and I love all the guys. I love all the little mini characters in those movies, but the fact that she got her nose busted open and was still looking defiant made me love her. So, who do you got, Love? Good.
So, for me, this is probably more of like a 3 or 4 screen time, like 3 or 4 minutes of screen time character, but you really only remember one scene of this guy. And it's in Billy Madison, and it's during the test of knowledge when the principal gives it, who's like emceeing, he's Alex Trebeking this test of knowledge between Billy Madison and the Bradley Whitford character.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, Mr. Madison, what you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I've ever heard. At no point in your ramblings or your rambling incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul. It's just like a simple wrong would have been just fine, but no. Like, I really love that character, just for that scene, that one little set of lines that he had.
Yeah, like, he's not really a cameo. He's more of a mini character, but he's not really even a supporting character.
Yeah, I mean, you probably see him in like 5 totally different scenes, and each time he'll have like one line, but then it was like right here that he had more lines than everything else combined.
Something about his wife, like someone sleeping with my wife. You know, Adam Sandler's the king of like 60 second or less. I know people make fun of him, but like, I don't know, you know, Rob Schneider, You Can Do It, in The Waterboy, like that was really popular. You can do it. Yeah. Like, that's a popular 60 second character. And like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, no, I love it. What do you got, Lazarus?
All right, I'm going back to the celebrity route here, but I'm going with Michael Cera from This Is the End. It might have been a little bit more than 60 seconds. I don't know, maybe like
playing himself, but entirely not.
Yeah, so he plays himself, but not really. I don't know, maybe. I don't know him in real life. But Michael Cera in This Is the End is basically a coke sniffing, hard drinking, just a-hole running around smacking Rihanna on the ass and just generally hated by everybody.
He blew cocaine and oh man, what's his name?
Oh,
McLovin's face.
Yeah.
Christopher Mintz
Christopher Mintz Plasse.
Yeah, Plasse.
Yeah.
And he's like having sex in the middle of the kitchen during a party.
Oh yeah. And then he doesn't know where his phone is, and he gets stabbed through the chest. He's like, I feel like a real jerk.
This is so embarrassing. It was so great.
Funny you mentioned that, like that he died like the most brutal way in that movie too, I think. Like, cause I saw that movie with a friend of mine who doesn't like scary movies, and we just thought we were going to see a comedy. And when he dies, that scared the crap out of my friend. Like she wanted to leave.
Really?
Yeah, that lamppost went through his chest.
Yeah,
like that was a dramatic. I mean, to us, we're so used to this stuff. We've seen so much stuff, and me, I love horror movies anyway. So I kind of laughed as my response. It shocked me and took me off guard.
I think that movie was a little bit darker than what most of the audience was expecting, or that the intended was, audience,
especially with the large. Well, I'll just say the thing with the devil.
Yeah, the well-endowed devil and Jonah Hill.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And then, you know, you just assume what else happened without talking about it much. But, like, yeah, that scene, like, if I was watching that with someone who wasn't, like, a really close friend, like, I might be uncomfortable watching that scene with some other people.
I will say that the movie had another great 60-second cameo. I didn't pick it. I mean, it was close, but I had to go with Michael Cera. But the other one was Channing Tatum as the Gimp.
Yeah,
it was just like he's
Danny McBride's leg.
That's like the same thing they did with Ryan Reynolds and Ted. Like,
and Harold and Kumar.
Oh, Neil Patrick Harris.
No, with Ryan Reynolds, he was hitting on Kumar.
Oh yeah,
oh, yeah.
About that.
John's, you know, there's like, oh, I wish I would have added that.
You know, Channing Tatum actually had a pretty funny interview. Like, I think it was on some late night show where he was talking about, like, doing the cameo for This Is the End. It's like, yeah, I had the Gimp suit on, and I thought it'd be funny to just kind of rush into Danny McBride's room and just, like, start humping him, like, all over his bed. Like, this is before I'd met him either. Like, Danny McBride was reading a book or something, and Danny McBride was so pissed.
Like, really mad?
Yeah, like, because Channing Tatum was full-on, like, Gimp suit. He just, like... This huge guy just rushes in your trailer and just starts humping you in a Gimp suit. I'm just like...
I would have paid to have watched that.
I don't know. It seemed like a fun movie to be on, I guess.
Oh, yeah. And it was single location, too. That would have been kind of, you know, just a laid-back shoot.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a funny movie. Had a lot of good cameos, a lot of celebrity cameos. But the Michael Cera one stood out the most.
And so... you know, I was going to – John Levengood, did you add Garth Vollbeck from Ferris Bueller or no?
No, I didn't
use him. I was going to use Charlie Sheen from Ferris Bueller because, you know, he has that great line where he looks over at Ferris's sister and he goes, drugs. And she goes, thank you. No, I'm straight. He's like, no, I meant, are you here for drugs? And she's like, no. And then she looks over at Garth and she goes, why are you here? Then Garth goes, drugs.
Drugs.
Yeah.
After a long, long pause, too.
Drugs. But, you know, I went for something else. And this is kind of weird. But I picked Laura Linney's brother in Love Actually, Michael. Because, I don't know why, but it's the weirdest relationship. Like, there's a scene at the end where she's hanging out and he tries to, like, throat chop her and she blocks it perfectly. And, like, how does he get on the phone all the time? Like, if he's trying to judo chop his sister every time he sees her, how are they letting him get to phones? And, like, why?
It's probably like, just, like, some scheduled thing.
He calls, like, late at night. Like, she, like, drops everything to go see him. It just raises so many questions about the relationship, and it's so sad. Like, she's just sitting there all, like, you know, she loves her brother, but he's trying to judo chop her in the throat. So, like, for that movie, like, which is loaded with a ton of 60-second or less, like, the driver that could sing, that was singing with Hugh Grant.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah,
and then, like, you know, the American cameos at the end, and, like, I don't know, just so many, like, little funny cameos. But I just loved – I don't know, I just – that brother was – it just weirded me out. It was such a weird subplot in this, like, love movie that this woman, like, she's American, but she lives in England. She meets I think he's Argentinian, Rodrigo Santoro. I'm not sure, but she meets him, and then she can't be with him because she has to go see her brother all the time. And his brother tries to punch her in the face, but yet she blocks it, and then they wear Santa hats at the end.
Well, you know, the thing, well, he's that brother who was clearly very disturbed, like, seemed to have more phone privileges than I would have expected now that you say it. But the blocking thing, that actually kind of stuck with me in a well thought way, because that more to me was revelatory that's happened many times before, and so she's kind of always on guard around him.
Yeah.
It's not like she's some ninja all the time. It's just that she's really careful when she's around him, and it kind of just shows like the painful relationship that they had.
I think Laura Linney's a ninja because have you not watched Congo?
Oh God, Congo. Whoa.
Ooh.
Let's talk about 60-second characters. Bruce Campbell and Congo.
Oh yeah. Or the Majestic. But no, I don't know. I just thought, I don't know. I've always been intrigued by like her ninja catches and like her brother calling all the time. Like, it's an interesting 60-second character. Or Rowan Atkinson had a nice 60-second character in Love Actually too.
Oh,
but I don't know. He's just. It's just a weird subplot. It's an odd subplot. It's always stuck with me. So, all right, Laz, what you got?
What are we on, the fourth or fifth one here?
Fifth.
Oh, this is the last one?
Last one.
Last one.
Well, okay. Really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Man, well, okay.
Okay. Well, I got a couple more here, but I guess I got to pick one. Okay. So we talked about Sean William Scott earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the earlier episode, yeah. Okay. I'm going to go with this one. I felt like, whoa, I had like a lot of celebrity like spots awesome on here. All right, I'm going to go with this one's really kind of obscure. I don't know if like people are going to remember this one, but like in Back to the Future, when Marty McFly comes back to the present, like he kind of crashes into a building, and then like the camera cuts to like this homeless guy on the bench, like he, I think he's clearly like hungover and drunk. Like he wakes up, he sees like the DeLorean like crash into a building, and he's like, crazy drunk driver, and he just like falls back asleep on the bench. I don't know why, but like for some reason that always just kind of stood out to me. I'm just like, oh nice, I don't know. Yeah,
crazy drunk driver.
Or how like the pine tree farmer?
Yeah,
like, you killed a pine.
Dude, I love Back to the Future. I love that there was a Back to the Future Day recently.
Yeah, was November
30th anniversary.
Oh, the October 21st, 2015.
Yeah. Crazy drunk drivers.
Crazy drunk drivers.
Then he just passes out.
Yeah.
That's probably how he, you know, got his first DUI, so he probably knows what it's like.
Yeah.
All right.
I love it.
I'm going to start by just mentioning two. I'm not going to talk about their scenes in the movies. I just have to give homage to two 60-second characters that aren't my pick. Large Marge from Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, yeah.
Who tells a scary story. And also the spoon-bending kid from The Matrix, which is, in fact, 70-second character. I actually timed it. But those were both very, very powerfully burned in my mind characters.
The lady in the red dress from The Matrix.
There's that here. She could have her too. There were a lot of neat little characters in
the movies. The Ravers in the second one.
But what I'm going with, and I'm really cheating now, like I'm forcing two together, but they're both from Groundhog Day. And in the beginning of Groundhog Day, every morning he wakes up, the radio personalities who have the morning show, when you hear them, they're kind of mumbling as Bill Murray gets up every morning, it's Groundhog Day, and you hear that over and over in the movie, and you hear them kind of bantering a little bit, like about their morning show and what they're going to talk about and all this stuff. And so it's just, you never even see them, and you hear them say the same thing each time, like 20 times in the movie. But I really like that. And Ned Ryerson.
Yes.
And we've talked about Ned Ryerson getting punched before.
Ned Ryerson?
Ned Ryerson.
Bang. Just knocks him out.
But you know, that movie was loaded with them. Even the piano teacher. Like, lots of that movie was just loaded with 60 seconds.
Oh, and the homeless guy. And Michael Shannon was in it.
I mean, the waitress, yep. who's watching him eat when he's given up on life, and he's like just ordered the menu of confections.
I love Ned though. When he gets knocked out, that's one of my favorite. And then he's like hugging on Ned. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. When he tries to make it weird for him,
I love it. Are there any runners up that you guys weren't able just are able to put out there?
Like, I mean, those. I forced mine in there. There were a few.
I also added the vegan police from Scott Pilgrim, like Clifton Collins and Thomas Jane, and the guys who stole the car in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I had the other group of survivors and Shaun of the Dead.
Oh yeah, yeah. Danny Trejo from Desperado, I thought was good. And then there's a henchman in Gross Point Blank that gets killed by a pen. That was actually like the stunt choreographer. I liked him, but.
I like the
Glenn Close wearing a beard as a pirate and Hook who gets put in the boo box.
What?
In Hook, when we first meet the pirates in Hook, you know, Dustin Hoffman is Captain Hook and everything. They have a boo box, and it's like a box full of scorpions or something, or a box with a scorpion in it. And the pirate that gets put in the boo box is actually Glenn Close wearing a beard.
Huh.
I did not know that.
And you know, it's like, you know, oh, put him in the boo box. And he's like, no, and shaking the head like frantically.
The Black Knight.
The Black. Oh, from Holy Grail?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was 60 seconds.
Yeah, like, I do think Monty Python probably have hundreds of them.
Oh, yeah.
But
or like the bunny.
But I just think. I just think it was fun that this post happened because. You know, I like what you said about Die Hard, you know, or Groundhog Day or Love Actually or the other movies we've talked about where the best movies have these side characters that are not featured for long periods of time. If you think about Tarantino films or like Pulp Fiction, you know, like the smaller characters, like that's what make the great films, I think, are these smaller like every character is almost fleshed out. And so I think they're very important to films. So that's why I wanted to do the 60 seconds or less. And it was fun.
I've got one just for you, Mark, because you like John Cusack so much. And I like him too, but like you're a John Cusack champion.
Cusack.
The Asian street racers with the with the loud whatever.
Like Howard Cassell voices.
Speakers. Yeah, yeah. Do it from Better Off Dead.
and the $2 kid.
The $2 kid. Yeah. I feel like when you first came up with the idea for this episode, I think the $2 kid was like your inspiration that you first mentioned.
Yeah, $2. But then I don't know. I love the guy. I still love the guy who eats chocolate bars before a gunfight. I just appreciate that. And I like shambolic court painters.
How about Samuel L. Jackson Coming to America?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hard to, there's been so many great ones. So, go on. But no, this was fun. I'm glad we did this.
Yeah, maybe we'll do it again someday.
Ooh, well, we have plenty more ammo.
Yeah, I'm sure. Just like Stallone in First Blood. Ayo. All right, on a pun like that, I think it's time to start wrapping up the podcast.
Yep.
All right, before we sign off, do we have any plugs to make?
Yeah, guys, head to iTunes, rate, review, subscribe to Movies, Films, and Flicks, the podcast. Head to Blog Talk Radio, check us out there, and just embrace all things movies, films, and flicks.
And by the way, I'm not very tech savvy, so I should be better about this. But I had a friend contact me recently asking which podcast app we were on, because when we transitioned to Blog Talk Radio, I think it changed.
Hmm.
Are we on Pod One?
Are you talking about on Android? Because I'm not sure. I know we're on iTunes for sure.
I'm on Android and I have Podcast Addict.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So Podcast Addict, people, you can hear us that way.
Yeah.
Try Google Play. I think we might be on Google Play now.
Ooh.
Okay. Actually. All right. There we go. Because they were looking. I've had people who were looking for more ways to listen because some people can't access certain things at work. Yeah. We want you guys to listen however you can. We're trying to help.
Yeah, if it's on Google Play, and we can check that. We can give the answer next week. But yeah, that's like you can find that anywhere.
Yeah, because Google Play just recently started accepting podcasts or opened up the podcast. So I don't know. We may or may not be on there.
Or just give us a call and talk to us about movies.
Yeah, just give us a holler. Give us a listener question. Yeah,
if you're one of our friends that hasn't talked to me in a while, call me up, man. We'll chat.
You know, we do actually have the ability to do a live call-in show, so it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That could be fun, the first ever live show.
Yeah. Then, like, no one calls, and then it's, like, super disappointing.
Hello.
Hello.
We'll like, set it up. We'll ring it. We'll be like, look, I'm going to text you, and then you call, okay? And then we'll be like, oh, we've got a call. Let's go.
You know, my brother did that when I had a radio show in 2002, early mornings with Dirty Doug. I thought Dirty Doug wasn't going to show up, so Eric came in early to do the podcast. The next week, he had someone call in and go, hey, where's Eric at? He's effing awesome, but they said the whole word.
Oh, really?
And it was like this radio show, and it didn't get edited out. Oh, so,
nice. Yeah, we'll do the same thing.
Yeah.
But they'll ask for Eric. Like, hey, Eric is effing awesome.
Like, you know what we can do? We'll be like, hey, I got to disappear for 10 minutes. Then I'll call up with a voice. Hey, this is a...
Yeah.
Is it just Christopher Lambert?
Oh, no. All right, guys.
All right, guys.
For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Yeah.
John Levengood.
Wait a minute. Was today really the first time that we got through an episode without Kurt Russell? Or was Kurt Russell in here?
Well, you just mentioned him. So, yeah. Yeah. He's still alive.
And that was an earnest thing, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have a good night, everybody.
I've been your host, John Lossworth. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.